Hello, welcome to Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Weldon. Today's story is the first installment of The Wilderwood, Book 2, a fantasy serial co-written for you by Daniel Hines and Joseph Montebello. There are 6 chapters in Book 2, so be on the lookout for new installments over the course of the next 2 months. Today, we'd like to say a special thank you to Armis and Pavo and their family in Portland, Oregon, Owen and Amelia and their family in Greensboro, North Carolina, Abai and his family in Portland, Oregon, Aurora and Elise Wood and their family in Phoenix, Arizona, Juniper and Cedar Denbaum and their family in Ashland, Oregon, and Bryson, Brianna, and Bowden and their family. Thank you so much, Bowden, Brianna, Bryson, Cedar, Juniper, Elise, Aurora, Abai, Amelia, Owen, Pavo, and Armis. You are part of what makes it possible for us to continue to produce fun new stories for our listeners. If you would like to support Stories Podcast and get every episode ad-free, head over to patreon.com/stories and join for just $1 a month. If you'd like access to all of our ebooks or to receive a thank you in a future episode, that's also available at patreon.com/stories. We have new Stories Podcast face masks available. Check those out, plus all of our other merch at storiespodcast.com/shop. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Stories Podcast. If you send us a drawing of your favorite scene or character, we'll share it on our feed. Now here's a word from our sponsors. Studies show that kids are getting behind in math because of the pandemic. How can we help them get caught up and stay ahead with their math learning?
Do what I did for my daughter Gracie. I set her up with a free consultation with Mathnasium.
Mathnasium is a great place for kids in grades 2 through 12 to learn math. They teach in a way that makes sense to kids, and they make it fun. Your kid can learn in-center or online, whichever way works best for you. Either way, it's the same face-to-face learning with instructors who really care.
Gracie was a little nervous before the consultation, but her instructors were so kind and patient, they set her at ease right away. They worked through a couple math problems with her, and when she got stuck, they explained things to her in a way that she really seemed to understand. Afterwards, they sent me a write-up of Grace's math strength and needs, and now they're making a lesson plan just for her so she can get the exact right support.
Whether you're looking to get your kids back on track or to ensure they're staying ahead with their math studies, schedule a free consultation with Mathnasium today. You can find a center near you at mathnasium.com, then call them for a free in-person or online consultation.
Hey, grown-ups, power up your family's playtime with the Nintendo Switch system, the home of Mario and friends. Jump into the unexpected with Mario, Princess Peach, and more in Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Or challenge each other to a race in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Go to Nintendo.com and browse the full lineup of Nintendo Switch systems. Additional accessories may be required for multiplayer mode. Games, system, and some accessories sold separately.
Thanks! Enjoy the episode! Previously in the Wilderwood. When we first came to the Wilderwood, we met 3 young people visiting the wondrous city of Edgewater, home of the frog people called Frosker. Harks, a fire sorceress, made friends with Nezzy, an elf girl with a magical connection to nature. They teamed up with Lachlan, a young squire skilled with sword and shield. They had each come to the city with their masters, who had an important mission to carry out, deciding what to do with a mysterious book that held unknown power. But when the city was attacked, the 3 had to work together to try and save the Frosker. They also saved a halfling named Waxham Whistlewood, and in turn, they were saved by a half-giant with a metal arm called Gothak. They escaped as the city was overrun, and once they were out in the Wilderwood, they found that they had to rely on each other to keep themselves safe. Before they left Edgewater, Nezzy's mother had given her a final command. Go into the Wilderwood. Find a wise Frosker druid and carry on the mission. And so, the group found themselves in the endless forest at the edge of the world. They had to figure out how to face the evil that had separated them from their teachers. But first, they had to figure out how to work together. The Wilderwood, Book 2. Chapter 1. Waxham Whistlewood walked quickly, their short halfling legs working to keep up with the longer strides of their companions. Harks and Lachlan were humans and stomped with purpose. Nezzy was an elf and picked her way silently through the forest, lithe as a deer. Gothak, the half-giant, didn't lumber as Waxham suspected. He chose his steps carefully. All of them moved fast, though, and Waxham had to jog double time to keep up. Still, as hard as that was, it was even harder keeping up with Hark's steady stream of questions. They were all imprisoned just for poaching? What did they hunt? Were they good hunters? The sorceress asked for the dozenth time. It had only been a day since they'd escaped from the attack at Edgewater, and the questions were already wearing on Waxham. Where I'm from, the punishment for poaching was only a day's labor per head. Hunting for 3 days and working for the realm for 3 was a steady way to feed a family. Whoever went to prison just for poaching? Well, the elves were pretty harsh on halflings, and my family had to do what we could to keep food on the table. Waxham felt sure that their tone would give Harks the hint that this was a sore subject, but the sorceress just wouldn't quit. Of course, the sorceress was right to be curious. A long sentence in prison was too harsh a punishment for poaching. But then again, thought Waxham, it really depended on what you were hunting. But what about... Hark started to ask, but Waxham cut her off. Let's figure out where we're going, okay? They walked faster, catching Nezzy's attention. Are you sure this is the way? Nezzy stopped and the group gathered.
I'm not sure exactly where we're going.
Well, that's bad, said Harks. You said you've been to the Wilderwood before. The rest of us have only heard the stories, the magic forest that no map can describe.
I meant that I don't know exactly, said Nezzy. But I can sense which way is north, and I know that we have to head north to find Asla.
She had told them all about what happened in the hall and how she'd heard her mother's voice. The warlock, overflowing with dark power, had stolen the red coffer and the powerful magic book inside. Asla, the Frosker druid, had disappeared in the commotion.
Do you think he got away? Lachlan asked.
He was right in the center of it all, Hark said. Either they snatched him or he bolted. He was the only one that could open the red coffer. He knows about that book that was inside. At least, I think he does, right?
I think so, Nezzy said. The warlock wouldn't have risked facing my mom, facing Shelsani and Babadin and Gorson and the rest, if the book wasn't extremely potent magic. Asla must know. It was my mom's last request that we find him, and she wouldn't have asked if it was for anything less than saving the world.
Saving the world? Asked Lachlan. Us?
We really think Asla knows that much? Asked Wax.
I don't know, but I trust my mom. We have to find him.
But where will we find food?
Gothak said. The half-giant's whiny question, delivered in his deep, gruff voice, brought a smile to Nezzy's face.
Let's see what we've got, Lachlan said.
He set his pack on the ground and started to set out its contents on a downed tree trunk beside the path, and the rest of the group did the same. After a few minutes, they all stared down at the paltry pile with worried faces. Is that all? Said Harks. I've seen bigger hauls in a gnome's pockets. It truly wasn't much. The only real weapons they had were Lachlan's sword and shield, plus his short, sturdy bow and a quiver of arrows. Waxham looked at the weapon with admiration, but didn't want to show it. The paladin squire also had a slingback, with a waterskin, a leftover pear shroom, and a small packet of dried meat. Under that, he had a drawstring bag that held fine sand and a cloak for polishing his armor. And last of all, he set down his token of Orlam, a medallion depicting the red gauntlet with small gems representing Orlam's light gleaming above it. Gothak's gear included a glass jar with dark grease in it, along with a leather toolkit and a small assortment of metal parts that looked like pieces from his clockwork arm.
Waxham smiled when they saw the Turalina beside the tools.
The tiny mouthpipe had been a popular instrument among the halflings, and they couldn't imagine the hulking half-giant playing it. Nezzy had carried the wooden wand that had grown from her mother's staff and the ragged moss necklace she'd received in Edgewater,
plus a tightly rolled vine that she said was good for making a healing broth. Along with that was a large vessel made from the hairy fruit of the Axabotlia tree. It looked funny, but could hold enough water to make a small pot of soup. Harks fished in her robes and drew out a spellbook that looked very new, and a ceremonial knife with a blackened blade. Wax looked at Harks questioningly, and she smiled. "Someone tried to scare a friend of mine back in Garrichin with that little poker. He apologized afterwards." She looked at the spellbook and then back at Waxham. Never really needed the spellbook, although Bobbidin, he thought it would help. Her smile fell away in confusion and she shook her head, clearly unsure how to deal with the well of feeling that rose up in her when she thought of her teacher. "So we have enough food for one snack for the big guy and nothing for the rest of us," Harks continued. "It's probably time to figure out a plan. I vote we eat the squire."
"I call the drumstick," said Wax.
Harks laughed and Lachlan glared at them both. "We need to hunt and gather some food," Nezzy said. "I have a feeling we'll be traveling a while, and we can't walk all day on empty stomachs."
"Are you okay with hunting?" Lachlan asked. "Of course, you know how to gather fruits and tubers and stuff, but I thought druids were, you know, animal people."
"Nature people," Nezzy said. "But hunting is natural. It's like my mom's book on the Wilderwood says."
When hunters chase, the prey must flee, and ever on they run. The quarry eats the plants that feed on creatures when they're done. Be grateful for the seeds and thank the meal beneath your knife. From birth to death and back again, life is meant for life.
"Good song. True song,"
Gothak nodded to himself. He was clearly comfortable finding his own food.
"Spears are easy to make. Let me show you."
He snapped a young tree off near the ground and began stripping the bark off with the metal edge of his hand. His entire arm had been replaced long ago by some kind of metal clockwork. To Wax, it looked like something the gnomes would cook up. The contraption ended in a simple vise for grabbing and carrying, but at some point during the battle, the half-giant had sharpened its edges into a sort of axe. It made short work of the branch, and soon he was holding a long, pointed spear. Harks patted Gothak's arm rapidly. "Make me one, just smaller than that. I'll go with you." Wax noted that the human girl's enthusiasm wasn't just about uncomfortable questions. Any new experience meant excitement to Harks. Nezzy looked at Waxham.
"Why don't we see about getting water and maybe some nuts or something? We can camp back here tonight."
"Sure," Wax agreed. "And Lachlan, if you let me borrow that bow, I can keep an eye out for small game while we go. I'm a pretty good shot."
Lachlan scowled.
"This bow is only for the Knights of Orlum," he said.
Then he spoke to Nezzy.
"I'll go with you. That way Gothak can protect Harks and I'll protect you two. And if anything needs to be hunted, I'll use the bow."
Nezzy looked at Harks. Neither one of them spoke, but they both smiled as if the two had shared a small joke, and Wax wasn't in on it.
"That will be nice, Lachlan,"
the elf said, carefully keeping the laughter out of her voice. Nezzy scooped up her wand and Wax looked at Harks.
"Can I borrow that knife, then? It could come in handy."
Harks was nodding, waving a hand dismissively at the halfling, her attention focused on the thin spear that Gothak was shaping for her. Quick as a wink, Wax scooped up the knife and tucked it away. Wax started off the path and into the woods to the east, with Nezzy close behind. Lachlan called to the others,
"We'll meet back here at dusk, okay?"
And before anyone could answer, he hurried after them. Harks followed Gothak through the woods, spear held low in her hands. She had thought the half-giant would barrel a path through the trees and run down some unsuspecting prey, but he was more like a wolf. His every step was measured, and, despite his hulking frame, nearly silent. Harks found she herself made more noise, brushing against every bush and cracking sticks underfoot. Finally, Gothak held up a hand, and they stopped.
"Come, look. There's a path, and it's not straight. Animals come through here."
Gothak pointed out into the woods. All Harks could see was more underbrush and ferns, just like the ones they were hiding in. They were well into the Wilderwood now, and everything, from the bugs to the bushes to the trees, was bigger, stranger, wilder. The colors were brighter, the sounds alien and constant. Two little animals chased each other through the trees overhead. They burbled out strange patterns of sound like they were talking to each other. Or to her, maybe. But she couldn't understand them any better than she could track animals through the forest.
"There."
Gothak pointed toward the path, but further along.
"Do you see?"
"Gotta be honest with you, buddy," Hark said. "I can't see the trail at all. I was always more of a city kid, you know what I mean? The most nature I got was eating a bowl of salad from time to time." Gothak grinned at her.
"I can show you. I've never been to Wilderwood, but it's not so different."
A nearby flower suddenly unfurled its petals and gave a long, loud belch that smelled like bitter honey. It dropped and then closed its petals again.
"Okay, so it's different,"
Gothak said, and Harks laughed. The half-giant began to gesture slowly so Harks could follow.
"But some things are the same. Look at your feet. You see some of the ground is clearer, leaves snapped off. This means something heavy has walked this path often. You see how it's not straight? It turns here and there like a river. This was not man-made."
Harks followed closely. For all her jokes, she loved to learn new things, when that didn't involve sitting alone with a dusty old book, much to her old master Bobadin's frustration. He'd eventually accepted that different people learn in different ways, but it was a battle they had fought until, well, until Edgewater. Harks felt tears sting at her eyes and wiped them away quickly. Gothak either didn't notice or pretended not to.
"You see some branches are broken," he continued, "but none higher than 3 feet off the ground. This tells us the animal is that tall. A taller animal, certainly a human, would break branches up to chest high."
"So we're on the trail of something short and heavy? Maybe it's a dwarf."
"Not a dwarf," Gothak said. "If it was a dwarf, we'd see beard hair caught in the thorns and things left on the ground. Dwarves are known for littering."
Harks laughed. "So not a dwarf. What then?" Gothak shook his head.
"Not sure. But look here. See the marks on the tree? And here in the mud, tracks. I've never seen tracks like this outside the Wilderwood, but we can still learn from them. Those markings on the tree tell us they have horns. The tracks show they are heavier than a human and walk on all fours with big, round feet."
Harks nodded. She could see the trail now. Not as easily as Gothak seemed to, but still, it was there. "Okay, I got it," she said.
"The tracks are fresh," he said, grinning at her. "Follow close and quiet now. They aren't far."
Harks nodded and they set off down the trail. Shortly, they heard a strange, snuffling honk. Gothak stopped and peered between two trees, motioning for Harks to do the same. She got closer and followed his eyes to the pair of heavy-set animals, trundling down the path. They were half as tall as a horse, with thick gray pelts and three strong, shiny horns curling up from the sides and center of their flat faces.
"What are they?"
she started to ask, and stopped in mid-sentence when Gothak glared at her. She knew that hunting was serious business to him, and he had told her to keep quiet.
"Whisper now," Gothak said to Harks. "Make your voice like soft wind."
He gestured with the tip of his spear.
"I believe they are called thunder beasts. Look, the second one is old, slow. We take that one. See the thick hide? We can't throw spears, they won't work.
Well, I can't use my magic, Hark said. My only setting is burnt to a crisp.
I have an idea, Gothak said.
He turned, staying low, and moved quickly alongside the path. Hark's had a hard time keeping up. Gothak's steps were much longer than hers, and she could be fast or quiet, but not both at the same time. Still, she did her best. They traveled away from the beasts, moving as quietly as they could for 5 or 10 minutes. Harks couldn't always see the path, but Gothak seemed to know where it was and kept them from crossing over it. He kept looking up into the trees, so Harks did too, trying to figure out what he was looking for. When finally he stopped, he was under an old tree with a heavy limb that stretched above the path. The tree was wavy but solid-looking, its bark a shimmering purple and its leaves solid and ridged like mushrooms. Gothak turned to Harks, gesturing for her to continue on.
You go down to the big tree there, past those stones. Stay hidden and let the first one pass you. Once it does, you jump out into the path and scream at the second. Wild animals don't like people. The first beast will keep going away from you, but the second one, the old one, will turn around and head back up the path. When she comes under this tree, I'll jump down and get her.
Harks nodded and started to move, then stopped and looked at Gothak. What if they're not scared of me? What if they come after me with those horns? Gothak nodded and thought for a moment, then smiled at her.
Use your magic, just a bit. Put fire on the end of your spear like a torch. Even animals who hunt don't like fire.
Animals who hunt? I thought we were hunting. I don't want to be hunted.
They had flat teeth to eat plants. Meat eaters have sharp teeth to eat you.
That's a cheerful thought, Harks whispered. But she hefted her spear and went to her spot behind the tree as Gothak started to climb. She wasn't so sure about this plan, but her belly fluttered with excitement. Besides, Gothak knows what he's doing, she thought to herself. At least, I hope he does. Harks waited. Soon, with much trundling and snuffling and honking, the first of the large beasts tromped past her. She let it go, and once it had disappeared into the brush, she heard the second approaching. Here goes nothing. She leapt out from behind the tree, shouting a resounding, "Hooyah!" at the beast. It froze for a second and then lowered its head. Hooyah! Up this close, the beast's horns gleamed hard and curling and sharp. It grunted and began kicking a stout leg in the earth, unmistakably about to charge. Panicked, Harks felt her magic pour through her. Tension pooled in her chest, then snaked down her arms and erupted from her hands as red, roaring flames. Her spear was burned to ash in a second, and several nearby bushes started smoldering. Whoops, she said. But it had the desired effect. The creature turned and started galloping back up the path. Hark shook her hands until the fire went out and watched the beast run along. Oh, it's going too fast, she thought. I just scared off dinner. Great, I'm going to be eating my boots before the week is out. But as fast as the beast was, Gothak was faster. With a huge cry, he leapt from the tree, spear in both hands. Harks watched him soar through the air, clockwork arm gleaming in the sun, and then crash to the ground. The earth shook, the spear flashed, and Harks smiled. It looked like she wouldn't have to eat her boots after all. To be continued. Today's story was Chapter 1 of The Wilderwood, Book 2. An original fantasy serial co-written for you by Daniel Hines and Joseph Montebello and performed for you by me, Amanda Weldon, with an original song by us all. Tune in next week for another new chapter of The Wilderwood, Book 2. There are 6 chapters in The Wilderwood, Book 2, so be on the lookout for new installments over the course of the next 2 months. If you would like to support Stories Podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, get ad-free episodes and more at patreon.com/stories, check out all of our merch available at storiespodcast.com/shop, Follow us on Instagram at Stories Podcast, or simply tell your friends about us. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Stories Podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus Kids in Apple Podcasts. Grown-ups, before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.